I think I might have done it.
Yes,
Hello.
finally, we're connected.
There
How's it going,
we go.
James?
Hi, Daniel. I'm good, thank you. I'm good. I was just totally confused by the Twitter Spaces interface there, and I was
Oh, don't
trying to
worry.
connect on my desktop, and then I thought, no, I'll try it on my phone, and I'm here. Sorry. Thank you so much. Thank you
It's
for
fine. It's fine. Don't
inviting me
worry.
and your patience.
Yeah, that's all fine. We always go for this because even if you would know the Twitter Spaces app inside, not the app, the function inside out, it's still going to be buggy every now and then. So I've been through this before. Nothing new under the sun. So don't worry. You've got that air cover
That's
to
great.
yeah, we can blame Twitter on this occasion. Yeah. Anyway, how are you? How is life for you?
I'm doing okay, thank you. I'm doing well. I'm having a good day. The sun started shining in London, so that's always good. That's a rarity, and I'm looking forward to it's like my first time doing an AMA kind of thing, so I'm excited.
Yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely.
looking forward to
Absolutely.
it.
What I plan to do is basically just have a chat with you for, I mean, this whole thing is going to be a conversation sort of thing back and forth. And then when people have a question, I mean, I'll start with a few questions just to get the ball rolling. But when people have a question, they can use the
Sure.
button in the lower left, I'm telling now to the people, request the mic, who adds you as a speaker. So what's happening?
Fantastic.
What's happening in the world of James Gill and in the world of Go Square these days?
The world of James Gill and Go Square. That's a great question. The world of James Gill is trying to make sure he's as close to his internet router as possible so that the Wi-Fi doesn't break. No, it's a pleasure to be chatting with you, Daniel. I think in terms of what's going on for me and the team at the moment, at Go Squared, we're working on a really exciting new feature release at the moment. We're hoping to get to release it in the next week or so, or at least definitely this month. And so that's always an exciting time because the team's been working really hard on a new feature. We're calling it Forms. It's all about helping our customers capture leads on their website, and it's been a hugely requested feature for a long time. So that's always exciting because it brings the whole team together from like engineering, the product side, and the growth side to get something out the door, and that's always exciting. So quite focused on that at the moment at Go Squared. For me personally, what's going on for me, I'm trying to make sure I focus on helping the team do that. I'm also, I guess there's quite a few things going on at the moment, quite a few habits I've been trying to adopt. Been reading a great book called Atomic Habits, which is really helping me develop some healthy habits and try to live a healthier life. And so I've been trying to increase my fitness, work on my schedule. I've been trying to write more. So I've been writing on my personal blog a little bit, which has been very helpful. Happy to talk about that some more. And I've also recently started a podcast called Lost and Founder, which is sort of trying to share some of my I don't know, my pain points, lessons, struggles along the way, which has been quite therapeutic for myself at least.
Right, that makes sense. I've seen the podcast released. I haven't seen the forms and the features you've mentioned, but that's because they're unreleased. Quick question: did you guys preview them in any place, or am I getting the exclusive flashy tabloid sort of set of news from you right now?
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit of a sneak preview,
Nice.
Daniel. So we're working on that right now, and for some of our existing customers, we've actually just this afternoon been shipping a version to some of our customers. So that's really exciting, and then teeing up to release something a bit more publicly in the coming week or so.
Well, that's
Yeah.
good. I'm glad I've got the exclusive sneak peek right here. You've heard it here
Well,
first.
of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Anything for you, Danny. Anything
I
for you.
appreciate that. I appreciate that. So many things you've mentioned that I want to touch upon, but I'll get back to them later because I feel like
Yeah.
the best sort of question to start with is, I mean, just like the title of the AMA, I spent half my life, 15 years, I'm quoting you here, half my life, 15 years building Ghost Squared. What I appreciate the most about that is the fact that one, sort of like I saw you were chatting with Jason Fried in his AMA, and then you made that video as well, which was lovely. I really love seeing that. So
Oh,
I can
cool.
see you like, or at least in some aspects, you like the Basecamp philosophy, staying small, not
Sure.
growing at all costs, and that sort of thing. I've also
Yeah.
chatted to Beth and Russell, who are in this Spaces room as
Yeah.
well. Great people.
I saw them.
Yeah.
Russell's meant to be on holiday,
Oh,
by
okay. I hope you didn't force
the
him to listen to this. Russell,
way.
give us a double tap if you're okay.
Fingers crossed.
Joke aside, what I'm trying to say is I've seen part of your team. And so a long, long tenure, short, small team, but very, very focused. So both Beth and Russell are smart. I see that they know what they're doing. They love what they're doing. How does that feel? Because I'm trying to read between the lines, and I can see there's a lot of work in building a team with people like Russell and Beth, and I'm sure the rest of the team should be in the same amongst the same lines.
I mean, honestly, where do I start? It has been so. A couple of things you mentioned, the Basecamp folks and Jason Fried. I think they've been a huge inspiration from the early days for us. I think we've always tried to build a company that maybe doesn't do the status quo or the normal route. And we've certainly shone away from a lot of the hyped advice for startups, especially around raising huge amounts of capital or seeking the TechCrunch fame. And have always tried to focus on building a company that we enjoy working at, that hopefully the team enjoy working at, even though we force them onto Twitter Spaces calls on their holidays. And we've always tried to, just a core level, like build a company and a product that we're proud to put our names to. And I think the team, I mean, the team give everything to it. You mentioned Beth and Russell there, and they've both been incredible for a long, long period of time with the company. And I often feel quite guilty when people sort of talk about a founder and how much, and often a lot of glory goes to a founder or a CEO in a team, and I'd like to think I try to deflect as much of that glory to the rest of the team, because everyone plays a critical role, and everyone is works so hard to make things happen. And I kind of view a lot of my job, especially as we've gotten to be a bigger, not a huge team, but a bigger team, a lot of my job to just be trying to make sure that I'm giving them what they need and getting out of their way when they don't need me. And I think it's just continued to amaze me what people can do as they as when you give them the space and the right guidance and the right guardrails. And I think I'm always trying to find my feet on that as a founder. There's plenty more I could talk to there. A lot of that is kind of partly why I've done the podcast thing, to sort of share some of that. But I think people like Russell have, Russell's been with us for so many years now, and worked his socks off day in, day out, and I couldn't ask for more from him. And Beth has just grown so much since, Beth joined us as a freelance sort of content writer many years ago, and on a part-time basis, and has grown into this amazing head of growth for us. And it's just amazing when people, when the going gets tough and things people have a when things get tough and when there's challenges, people can either shy away from them and think, well, that's not my job, and
100%.
that's not for me. I'm not here to do that. Or they can step up and take that on and treat it as an opportunity to grow. And I think that's certainly what we try and look for with anyone on the team. But Beth and Russell, obviously, I would have to say that as they've chosen to spend their afternoon on this call. Like they do that in spades. So happy to talk more on team stuff. But yeah, I'm forever amazed at how and humbled really that I get to work with great people. And that's a big reason why I love running a company. You get to choose who you work with, and you get to work with great people if you don't piss them off.
That's lovely. That's lovely. And I resonate with what you say to the degree in which I think, you have all these waves that might come and go, might come and stay, who knows, like creator economy, building a public, whatever. Part of me would like to believe that we're going, this is just my opinion, and I'm going to be short about it because this is not my AMA, but part of me likes to believe that we're going this direction where a company will be more of a set of people who are quite autonomous up to a degree and have space to. And the reason why I'm saying this is space to grow. The reason why I'm saying this is because I see you guys in Go Squared have this dynamic. And I think that's lovely. But talk about, I want to pick something else that you said. You said we're not looking for the TechCrunch mention or the TechCrunch fame. However, across these years, some stuff happened to you in terms of PR, in terms of attention. Like you've been on Bloomberg, you've been on the cover of Square Mile, which, if people don't know, it's a magazine for men's luxury lifestyle sort of thing. So that was definitely nice as a side effect that just came without you looking for it.
Sorry, I know I might be darting around a little bit. I mean, just back onto your point on the team, just for 1 second, Daniel. I would just say that it's been incredible since in the last year that everyone's been through with the with going remote and everything, that I actually think as a team and as a company, we've evolved quite a bit thanks to it. And I think beforehand, if you look, if you rewind sort of 2 years, I think we were a much more rigid, formalized structure of a company. And I think over the last year and a half, we've really learned to embrace some of the freedom that the remote working gives us. And I mean, as an example, like Russell's based up in Scotland, although he's currently in Canada, which confuses things even more. Team members sort of the strictness on when people work and where people work just it isn't there anywhere near like it used to be. And I think that's been overwhelmingly for the better of each individual and working to their own areas that they feel they work best and collectively as a team. And I think you can only do that when you have real trust in the people that you work with and have great people that you work with. And so, yeah, I just wanted to touch on that because I think it's been a bit of a shift for us. We were previously all in one office, all around one set of desks, and I think there was a lot of concern from myself and others that that these changes would be really destructive to our culture. But I think if anything, we've learned to grow and develop, and not that we haven't got stuff to work on, but yeah, I think we've chosen to embrace the changes over the last year and a half. And then yeah, so I just wanted to touch
No
on that,
worries.
but then yeah, on the publicity side and attention side, it's not that we actively seek to avoid attention in the media, but I think there's been some things where we've gotten lucky and we've been very fortunate. to get some attention. And you know, part and parcel of being around for a long time, you by default you probably end up bumping into a journalist or a bit of a blog post here and there, without even necessarily trying to. But yeah, I don't know, over time, like probably the most flattering thing that's personally happened to me was getting put on the front of a magazine in London, which was nice. I got to wear a Paul Smith suit and do a photo shoot. I had to give the suit back though. But that was an honor. But you know, like that, things like that, they make you feel good, but
right, hold
it's
on,
always hard
hold on.
to.
I need to compliment because I
Yeah.
know you're humble enough not to bring it up, but for the people listening, Square Mile is a magazine that had on their covers people like Daniel Ricciardo, Formula One driver, Leo DiCaprio, Henry Cavill, Idris Elba, all sorts of people. So that was the, and the reason why I'm saying this because, and the reason why I brought it up was because that's what I think is interesting. You guys are not actively looking to get the next headline or to become viral or something. So, okay, I understand you're saying this is a bit of luck, but it's also the fact that, you know, when you're lucky, you also need to be ready to pick it up. So that's nice that it happened without even putting in effort to actively look for it. And of course, it's a vanity thing. Like, I'm pretty sure that you didn't get too many more customers after you were on the cover. But I like the calm mindset. And hey, look, it could happen this way as well.
I mean, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio is not too much of a tough act to follow, you know. No, I mean, I yeah, the getting on the into a magazine is always nice. It's always nice to tell your friends and family about it or whatever. But yeah, I think there's opportunity out there for a lot of people in terms of getting more exposure and awareness that, you know, at times I think we've been very fortunate, but I think also I'd look at it and think like there's often opportunities outside of the normal expectations of what you can do. And I think a big part of, you know, being a smaller team and an upstart and a hungry, small, young team that's hungry to take on opportunities is looking at things from different angles and different perspectives. And you know, when you think about trying to get awareness and exposure, it can sometimes be tempting. I think on the marketing side, we often have this debate of like, there's a hell of a lot of marketing that is just impossible to truly attribute or measure. And I think sometimes there's this real desire, especially in the tech world, to do stuff that to sort of overvalue the work that can be measured and undervalue that can't be measured. And I think, you know, when you look at growth and you look at opportunities, you can sort of look at things like Google Ads and display ads and these paid channels as you know, often it can feel, especially when you're sitting at your computer, like, well, you don't have much choice but to write a check to Google to grow your business. But I think especially for us in the early days and building awareness, like there was a lot of opportunity out there to do things that would spark some attention and be resourceful. And I think that's also comes from when you don't have a ton of money in the bank, you sort of look at, you know, if you've just raised $10 million, then you have a lot of money to throw behind ads. If you've spent a lot of time trying to build up revenue from customers and haven't raised so much money, then you don't have so many options on how to grow. So you try and work with what you've got, and what we have got and what we've had has been, well, like I would say, like being in London is an opportunity. Like it's not San Francisco, but it has different opportunities. And at the time, we were a tech business run by a young team, and the startup scene in London was much more in its infancy. And so we sort of jumped on those opportunities to kind of talk about that and hopefully inspire other people. And that was quite a cool opportunity to jump on. And then there's also, you know, I think there's also lots of opportunities if you're just quick and reactive. So, you know, often there's opportunities with news cycles and on social media, for instance, like you can, if you're quick to respond and be the first to give out to come up with a meme response to something or a funny reply to something. I got a book ages ago called Newsjacking, which I quite liked, and it sort of uses it talks about how you can use the news cycle as an opportunity to jump on whatever's hot and find a way to fit your brand into it. And obviously some brands get that right and sometimes they don't, but we've done some very successful things by jumping on opportunities quickly. And you can't plan for those things. You can't plan like, oh, in 2 weeks' time we're gonna jump on whatever the hottest story of the day is, because you don't know what it will be and you don't know what you're gonna do. But I think that's part of like giving yourself a little bit of room in your schedule and understanding that there's opportunities if you respond quickly, and I think that's been pretty fun to see over time. Things like I remember one of the most successful in terms of traffic generation things we ever did was one of the team was staying late in the office and was just looking at our uptime graphs and our lots of our internal data and saw a massive drop in all of the traffic to our systems and across all of our customers and all of their websites. And he thought like, oh God, like something's gone wrong. Like, oh my God, like what's happening? Like we must be having
What
issues.
happened?
And then realized, he realized that actually Google had gone down
Oh.
for about 5 minutes. And he just shared this graph really quickly, like an internal graph on our engineering blog of all places, showing like how we dropped, I think, about 40% in traffic across our entire network of all of our
Yeah.
customers. And whatever happened, like that graph got picked up by like someone on Twitter, and then it got picked up by another person on Twitter. And when we woke up the next morning, this single graph had been shared by almost every major news outlet around the world as one of the authoritative sources of information about the impact Google can have on internet traffic. And it literally got featured in like, I think the Washington Post, it got featured in like the Times in the UK, it got featured by newspapers in Germany and Australia. I think it got featured on the BBC, all sorts of places. And all from just being kind of quick to respond and quick to surface something. And I think there's always a danger in companies as they scale and grow. If you often want to put more process in place to be more predictable with how you do things. But sometimes, you've got to figure out when you let that process ease a bit to jump on opportunities and just be quick to react and change the thing. So, yeah, that's a big rambling response to whatever you asked me the first day,
No, no, don't worry. Don't worry. It's fine. I love the story
Stefan.
about the engineering pickup.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I
That's good
hear from
fun.
you is you can't really plan to get lucky, but in a sense you could be ready to get lucky. Or when luck hits you could
Yeah.
be ready.
That's probably a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
I wanna tell people now, so I'm gonna go with my next question, but I wanna tell people like if they have a question. Two ways to go at it. Either click the button in the lower left corner, request the mic, we'll add you as a speaker, or if you can't talk for whatever reason, you can DM me and I can be the voice for your question. But James, until we get somebody coming in, another angle I want to pick up on it. The thing is, many
Yeah.
things I can pick on from what you said, but then we'll speak for longer than one. I think we can speak for hours. Another thing I would really hate to miss out on asking you is. So you
Yep.
started this when you were 15, and that's half your life. So if my math is holding up, you're 30 years old now. What sort
That
of, as a young person myself, and for anybody else listening to this, because this is getting recorded, so it's not just the people in the room now, maybe even in the future.
correct. Yep.
For
Cool.
young people listening to
Yeah.
this, I feel like advice is pretty much a time shortcut if the advice you're listening is right and you're understanding it and everything. But what sort of time shortcuts or advice would you give to maybe younger self, maybe young people generally? I just feel like you've got, as you said, you've got worse stories and worse scars. So sometimes the scars help you make a better decision. But talk to us, if
Yeah.
you will, about what you would tell younger people given the experience.
Yeah, it feels weird because I still feel, for the most part, young. But
Younger, I have to say.
something about turning 30 feels very daunting. But yeah, I don't know. I think that's well, it's an incredible privilege to feel like I should be in any position to offer anyone
I mean,
advice.
look, it could be somebody
But
who's
I guess,
29 or it could be somebody who's 15. Let's call it that. Just younger.
Yeah, I don't know. I think obviously everyone's on their own journey. Everyone's got their own things to figure out. I think for me, turning 30 has actually been an opportunity to reflect on various things and look at what maybe I wish I'd known earlier or sooner. So I yeah, just trying to think about that a little bit. I think I would say, let's see where to start.
If you would be sitting at the table and across of you is James at 20 or 22, so a few years of experience, but also still, and I suppose you won't be closing Go Square tomorrow. I still feel like you keep going with the company for as long as you could. This is the vibe I'm getting. I might be wrong, but this is pretty much the vibe I'm getting from your communication and everything.
No, yeah, certainly not. No intention to close Go Square tomorrow. Yeah, no, we've got I think a very exciting future ahead. And part of why I love doing this is I feel there's so much opportunity always ahead, and so much opportunity to grow, to develop, to learn, to put great things out into the world, and to continue working with amazing people. But yeah, I think looking back, I would say it's very, I mean, let's try to preface this maybe with people that are looking to, I mean, we're talking about SaaS predominantly, I guess. So, I'm assuming that these, people listening, tuning in, are vaguely interested in being entrepreneurial in some way, and starting a business, or at least being core to a smaller business or a smaller team. I think it's so important to make time for yourself and to make sure you look after yourself. I think I've found a lot of conflict over the years of how to think about my own personal life versus the company and the business. And I've often struggled to separate the two. And I think that has led to challenges for me around being as objective as I should be about the business. And it's led me to make, I think, at times, poor decisions in my personal life. Driving people up the wall that I either live with or have relationships with or whatever. And I think that's just something to bear in mind that it's really important to watch out for. I think you don't get infinite time on this planet, and I think you have to be very conscious with the trade-offs you're making. And I think, again, sort of coming back to a lot of the narrative around company building, this desire to, it's incredibly glorified to build a unicorn or a $1 billion company. And I don't think people spend enough time really understanding the implications of that for people as individuals and the trade-offs that might need to be made. And I think one of the reasons why there's so much exciting stuff happening with the creator economy and with a lot of the sort of independent businesses and the likes of the Basecamps of the world, but also there's a huge number of bootstrapped independent businesses out there. I think it's a reminder that it's perfectly acceptable, if not preferable in my eyes, to build a business you enjoy working at and you enjoy doing and you enjoy running, and that you find for yourself the right level of balance between what you do for your business and what you do for yourself. And find ways to make them work together. And I think the mindset of giving everything to your business, giving every waking minute to your business, and if you don't do that, then you're not trying hard enough, is very dangerous to be the predominant theme of entrepreneurial advice, I think, especially the Silicon Valley mindset. But that's not to say that I think anyone should sort of feel shame in that approach. I just think it's just important that people realize, like, there's no single way to build a business. There's no single way to live your life. There's no right way or wrong way necessarily. And that you spending time figuring that out for yourself is, it often feels, I think when I've tried to do that in the past, I've felt that it's almost selfish. And I felt uneasy spending time thinking about that for myself. And I only in the last sort of year or so, I started working with a coach who really encouraged me to try and think about that stuff a bit more for myself. And that's been incredibly valuable. So I think that's probably one thing I would say. I think I probably got told this as well when I was younger, to try to work with some sort of coach or mentor as early as possible, because it's not so much that that person's going to tell you the right things to do or the wrong things to do and stop you doing certain things, but that person is going to force you to think about this stuff more for yourself and give you that time. And I think that's something I would have loved to have done earlier. And if I was starting off in the start of my 20s again, I think I would immediately go and try and find someone to be my mentor or my coach. And I would say that's an incredibly valuable thing, because you'll learn so much about yourself by doing that, and learn so much about what you want to do and what makes you tick. And that can only help you in the business you run or the team you choose to be part of. And I think that probably would be probably my biggest takeaway. But if you ask me in an hour's time, I'll probably say something totally different.
Don't worry, we exist in space time, so that's a dimension as well. I get that. Both answers are very interesting, especially since on number two, I'll briefly mention that time and time again, not from every founder, but from more than I expected, I've heard this piece of advice of getting a coach or a mentor. I was speaking to Vlad, the founder of Webflow, and somebody else, I think Jason Cohn from WP Engine, might be mixing up, but multiple, not just them two, on a recording, they've mentioned this coach bit. And when you say that, do you mean somebody who you pay the same way you would pay a therapist, or is it a mentor in the sense of a friend, maybe more experienced person, that sort of, I mean, mentor, that's what I meant when I say mentor.
I think maybe I was a little bit hazy with what I was saying there, because I think both can be very valuable. So one of the benefits I think that we've had, or certainly that I've had from being running Go Squared in the London tech scene, has been having a good network of other founders and like-minded people to talk to. And I would view those people maybe slightly more like mentors or people to go to with questions or share a tough problem with, and also to be a sounding board for them too. And I think that's been very valuable for me over many years, like, realizing that the problems you're going through, whether it's I don't know, a big customer leaving, or a hire that you couldn't make, or challenges like that, realizing that you are not alone in those challenges has been incredibly valuable. But I think the bigger change, the bigger like shift for me, has been working with a coach for over a year now, about a year. And the coach, I think, is a different proposition. That is someone that we pay, and essentially I have a sort of an hour and a half session every 2 weeks, 2 3 weeks. And that those sessions, they don't, I don't get on the call and listen.
Yeah.
I don't listen and wait for like all the answers to be given to me. The session is almost entirely me talking. And the first few times I did it, I was like, oh God, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm rambling, I'm sorry, I'm talking to you, and I'm talking to you, I'm not letting you speak. And every time she was like, no, this is why you
That's the
pay me.
point. Yeah.
I'm here to
Yeah.
listen. And I think over time I've gotten much more used to it. And it's been amazing because all the, not to diminish what a good coach can do, because I do believe I have a fantastic coach. But she doesn't say too much, but she says things like, well, what do you think about that? And what would you do if you weren't worried about other people's feelings? Or what would you do as a, if you were the CEO? What would the CEO do? What would James, the CEO, do in that scenario? And she asks the right questions that bring out a lot of stuff that I didn't know I already had figured out. And I think that's really truly helped me understand, just realize there's so much more inside you that if you have a good coach or you find the right techniques, you can find a lot of those answers from within. And I think that there's probably a bigger point there of like, I think for so many people in the tech world, like there's always another blog post to read, or there's always another podcast episode to listen to. There's always another Twitter Spaces session to listen to. There's always another Twitter thread to read. But there's always more information to glean. But often I think people overlook the answers they already have, or the thoughts they already have inside, the experience they already have inside, the gut feels they already have inside to move forward with things. And I think if you can find ways of unlocking that and getting that out of what's already in your own head, then that's an incredibly powerful thing to do. And I think a coach can really help instill the right mindset and the right habits, the right techniques to give you that resilience, that inner ability to make tough calls and move forward with things in tough situations. So yeah, I think it's been incredibly, incredibly valuable. And yeah, I would say having a coach, I would say, is very, it's definitely something different there to sort of ha that I have lots of like industry peers, other founders that I talk to. And it's important to have those too, that network of people that you can grab a drink with and share a shitty day with, or just pick each other up, or hold each other accountable even. But that's very valuable in its own right. But that's a sort of separate, in my head at least, a separate set of value that I get versus a coach, where I feel that's more about unlocking what you have within yourself and giving you some space to get that nailed. And I think that's for me being incre even more valuable.
That's valuable as a conclusion from you, what you were saying about I have this course, but it's mainly me talking. Because now that I think about it, when I imagine a mentor, and I mean a proper mentor, not somebody who tells you what to do because they claim they have the answer. A proper mentor is more asking you the questions and letting you figure it out. And dare I even say, a proper mentor might seem boring at the surface level, because I mean we all want somebody to tell us, I have the exact answer and this is it. But at the end of the day, we're all humans, we're limited, so we can't know that. So maybe that's why the Buddhist Zen masters were quite boring on the surface level, because they just asked questions and they never gave you the proper answer. So
Yeah.
I understand this as a conclusion from what you were saying about the coach, which I think is really, really valuable. But yeah, so w would you have gotten a coach even in your 20s, like as soon as possible?
I think so. I really think so, because I think I forget where I read or what I've seen before, but when you think about when you think about a lot of other professions, you have a coach. Like no one thinks about being a professional athlete without having a coach to continuously help them grow and be better. And I think, not that I not that I am an Olympic athlete or anything like that of the CEO world, but I think it's not a terrible comparison to think that, like, you I think it does help you grow and develop, and I think it really helps you build more clarity for yourself. And I think that's certainly something I really would have loved to have done sooner. And I think it's a tremendous it is an investment that it feels weird sort of saying, well, you should pay someone to talk to for an hour every few weeks. It feels very indulgent in a way. But I think, honestly, if you can get clearer about what you want in life and what makes you tick, and what you would rather not be doing, I think that can help you genuinely transform your life. And I think if that's not worth investing in, then I'm not sure what is. And I think people are often it's an odd one, because I think people are often very irrational with their decisions of where to spend money. And when it comes to spending, I think people are often a lot more fearful of spending money than they are of spending time. I think when you get an invoice for something, you go, oh, crikey, that's expensive. But you don't get an invoice for, like, how much time you spend on things. And I think, if working with a coach can, in your early 20s, if working with a coach can help you choose the right path for what you want to do in your 20s in your life, then I'll get clear about that and get clear about what you shouldn't do. Then I think it would be hard to put any price tag on that, to be honest. Like, how would you even quantify that?
Well,
So I think, it could be incredibly valuable. And I would also say that, like, I don't know how, God, I don't know how ironic or weird this is coming from me, sort of suggesting some advice,
go on.
but I'd be very hesitant to anyone sort of who goes to someone and anyone who starts giving you advice saying, this is the way you should do something, and this is the way you do it, this is the way you build your company, this is the way you build your life, this is the way you should be. Like, I think everyone I respect, everyone I know, like, they've done things their own ways, and anyone giving you can only really share what's worked for you. Everyone's different. Everyone's got their own weird quirks and their own desires and goals. And, there's no one right or wrong way. You have to find what works for you. And so seeking people that will help unlock that in yourself, and seeking people that ask you the right questions, and don't try to find people that will give you the answers, because no one's got the answers. They've got their own opinions, their own experiences, their own data. And you have to figure out what you want to do and what's going to make you
Yeah,
work.
I think everybody sooner or later in life, everybody has to learn that, hey, every piece of advice you listen to, you hear, it comes with a comma. This is what worked for me, with a disclaimer. I can't guarantee it works for you. So, yeah, but talking about worse cars and referencing your AMA bio, which I really liked. And I mentioned this to you before. It's those worst cars of listening to somebody thinking somebody has an answer that makes you understand that, I guess, or at least to quote myself, to be a bit meta, at least this has been my experience so far. So, yeah. Go on.
I think as I've gone on, like, when I was younger, people would ask me questions, and I think my naivety or my lack of experience, I would often answer people quite directly, and sort of give them a straight answer to things that maybe I shouldn't have been so clear on. Like, if you ask me, like, what's the best way to grow your audience for a SaaS business, I could tell you what has worked for us and what hasn't, but I can't give you an objective answer. And
Yeah.
I think at some level, like, you get to this frustrating point where the answer to every single question is it depends.
Right.
And it depends on so many factors. And that's a bit dull and a bit like not exciting. But I think, yeah, it's just, everyone wants the answers or shortcuts or quick wins. And sure, there are some ways of speeding things up and getting to answers quicker, but I think a lot of the best things are to find good frameworks, find good ways of thinking about things yourself, find good underlying principles, and to get clear on what you yourself want to do and achieve, and to not wait for someone else to give you an answer.
No, this all makes sense. And to anybody listening to this, for which this might not make sense, at least up to a degree, I guess sooner or later it will, because well, life teaches us all sooner or later. So we're taking it to the grave. Yeah.
This has gotten so deep, hasn't
Yeah, well,
it?
I love it. But let's switch gears as well, so at least in the recording we can have some sass or some
Yeah, of
insights
course, yeah.
on a business level, which, by the way, I really enjoyed the depth of it. But just to cover a wider variety of topics,
Sure.
in hindsight, after 15 years, walk us through what was your 80-20 in terms of maybe growth, maybe whatever kind of metric. I mean, growth is usually the one we're talking about, but if you want to pick another metric, that's perfectly fine as well.
As in, like, what's the 20% thing that has yielded 80% results? That kind of is that what you
Yeah,
mean?
because
Yeah.
I guess after talking to founders, and whether people realize it or not, I've seen the other people do this as well. As you said, everybody has their own way of getting there, but every company has to try 10, 20, 30 things, and then two of them are going to be, or one of them, or three of them are going to be the most fruitful. So let me know if that's not the case. I'd be curious to go on.
Absolutely. I think I've never sort of done the work to figure out if it's truly 20% of the stuff and the 80%, but I think some of the things that have certainly over time proven out to yield very good results for a fraction of the effort we put into other things has been writing very good content. And that has, for us, the work going into a single very good blog post can yield results for years to come. And that's been incredibly valalable. Over time, we've spent so much time and energy in all sorts of other growth methods of getting people to us. Things we spent countless thousands of pounds on ads, on pay-per-click, on display ads, on all sorts. And I think over time we've realized that, perhaps channeling that energy into really good content is a better use of our limited resources. I think also maybe a slightly more productivity related one is that I think sometimes, and this is something I think we've slipped a bit on and we're trying to bring back, but I think on product work, there's often this real desire to do product work that, like, delivers on what a customer is asking for and no more. This term minimum viable product is obviously very common and banded around a lot. And I think what we have pr found previously is when you go to an unreasonable degree of attention to detail or adding a level of whimsical delight into a product, in only a few small places, but doing a few things that people don't ask for, and a lot of people won't even necessarily notice. I think that can sometimes yield immeasurably strong results as well. And I think, where we've done that in the past, at critical points in the customer journey, it instills this, again, this is sometimes quite hard to measure, but I truly believe that if you can get some of the underlying stuff right and apply that delight and that real attention to detail and in certain places in the product, then it can instill this level of confidence in your users and customers. And it can be the difference between someone being satisfied with a product and being overjoyed to use your product to the point where they will tell other people about it. And I think we've found that in the past. And I think it's always difficult to justify that work. And it's sometimes hard to prove. It's incredibly hard to prove. But I think for us, that's been some areas where we've really found that perhaps it's that extra 20% of work, but it's been yielded many more results than if we hadn't done it before. So yeah, I think for us, some really on the growth side especially, it's been putting the time and energy into some great content. And I think sometimes with that, it's about on the content side, I think also it's not just been about writing a good post, but it's the 20% effort of like getting the headline just right and getting that image that like people see just right. And I think that's sometimes the difference between a post getting seen and loved versus glossed over in a sea of other content. And I think those are a few things. I mean, yeah, God, I feel like I should have more. I mean, maybe one more
No worries.
would be just if you can try to make time to get on calls with customers. And I think I've struggled with this at times, but I got on a call with a potential customer yesterday, and I would say that was about 20% of my day. But it really, I think if you can take the time to get on calls with customers and listen, that can have a huge, huge impact on the rest of your business, of your funnel. And I think that is arguably something you should never grow out of as a founder or as a team member on a small team. Like I think it's always dangerous if you step too far away from not just what customers are saying, but how they're saying it, the intricate words that they say and the tone of voice they have when they say it. There's so much like valuable wisdom in every minute of those calls. And I think if you do that, then it can that 20 minutes, that 30 minutes on a call with a customer can yield so much valuable insight for what you do product wise, what you do pricing wise, what you do growth wise, content wise, education wise, positioning wise. And so I think certainly, like the earlier you are as a business as well, like the more critical that is, the less that's something that can be avoided, the less optional that becomes.
That makes sense. That's super strong. And a bit of a piggyback on the last bit about talking to customers. Do you ever talk to customers to validate, quote unquote, validate as much as you can, or to, run it by the new features or new products or new directions? Do you ever do that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think we'd be crazy not to. I think, especially this year, I know, especially Beth actually has hopped on many, many calls with customers. Rachel on the team too. Russell, who's obviously here, is he fronts so many of those calls, and I think when working on a new feature and a new product, often the mistake we've made in the past, and I think I see a lot of other companies making, is that you get ideas for features, or you ask customers, you listen to what customers want, and then you go away and you start building it. And then the next time you talk to the customer is once you've built it and once you've released it. And then so you go from, like, at least this is from what I've seen, like, you get a lot of feedback early on, you go and build the thing, and then you talk to them once you've done it and once all the work's done. And I think as much as possible, trying to involve customers throughout that process, like whether it's a new feature, a new product area, or a new new whatever it is, like, trying to involve customers, I think overall, especially when you're in a smaller team, a smaller company, like, I think it's incredibly valuable to be, because it makes the customer feel part of the growth of the company. And I think sometimes when you're a smaller business, that's one of the most valuable things you can do to make them feel part of the growth and evolution of your business and your product. So for us, I think that's been incredibly valuable at times. Like when we were building out the live chat features in the product, we worked incredibly closely with customers. We had, like, an open kind of forum where they could drop us feedback, where they would raise their concerns, they would tell us why they weren't using it, what was frustrating them about it. And I think we ended up with a very loyal group of people using the product, and building a product that was much more aligned with their needs, rather than going away building something and then hoping that we got it right. So I think, yeah, the more you can work with customers, involve them. Like, if you've got a bigger pool of customers, then maybe creating, like, a group, you could create, like, a VIP kind of group of customers that you seek for feedback, that make them feel welcomed, and give them early access to things. I think there's a lot of opportunity for SaaS businesses to do that. And I think both sides win. Like, you as a business get so much more feedback and get customers bought into the evolution of the platform, and hopefully loyal, much more likely to grow and expand customers. And customers get early access to features, get to geek out and see what you're building. And I think for a lot of SaaS businesses, that's a real opportunity, actually.
I'm really happy you mentioned that, building with the customer, making them feel even more special with VIP, because that's what I was trying to touch upon, or trying to see how it is in Go Squared. I listened to this thing a couple of weeks or maybe months ago that stuck with me. It was the story of David Cancel from Drift.com, and he was saying how, I don't even know whether it was in Drift or in the previous company. He was saying how they would have a customer paying something like 20,000 a month, and they would talk about new features, or they would say, "We need this, we absolutely need this." But then the customer would say that. But then he would say something like a stupid amount, telling them, "Look, you need to pay $5 more a month. It's just an internal policy or something," just to see if they're actually committed. Because then that effort, that sort of movement would quote unquote validate it, in the same way in which you were saying, if you listen to them, go build, and you only get in touch with them being the customers. When it's done, there's a lot of lost value in between. So maybe involving them with money is the example I've given, or the example you've given was involving them in the sense of actually building it with and for them, which I think could be valuable as well. If they take a long time to get back to you, like weeks, or they don't get back to you at all, that's a sign of lack of validation, I should say.
Well, yeah,
So
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I think the classic saying of build something people want. If you're building it and you're struggling to get hold of people to give you feedback during the evolution of it, then
there's your answer.
that's a very good sign that maybe this is not the thing to be working
Yeah.
on, or that maybe you've got the wrong people that you're building it for, or it's definitely something you are actively learning, which is incredibly valuable. And I just think the more you immerse yourself in what customers are saying, doing, needing from you, the better you can build a product and a company around them. And that's at the heart of what we're trying to do. So I think it's certainly, I guess we could talk all day about product management, product decision making, product vision, but I really think you've got to also balance that customer input with a level of vision and decision making that you have as a leadership team or as a founder. I think it's an area I often find I'm trying to figure out of like I've got a vision for where I want us to take the Go Squared products and the platform, and marrying that up with customer feedback and customer demand, and marrying it up with customers who don't always necessarily know what they want until they see it, or they tell you what they want, but they maybe articulate it in a different way to how you see it. And marrying vision and customer feedback up is, I think, an incredibly delicate and difficult thing to get right. And it's something we're always trying to iterate towards. But I just think generally, like, you can't have a vision for a product if you don't deeply understand the people you're trying to build for and their own challenges or their own problems and what their needs are. So, the more you immerse yourself in what your customers want and their challenges, and but when pre-lockdown, if we can remember back that far, one of the things I enjoyed so much was when you would go to visit a customer in their office, and you realize that, for us, like, we spend all day every day thinking about Go Squared, and we're thinking about every little detail of the product. And okay, some of our customers might care about that, but when you go to visit a customer in their office, you realize that you're one of 20 tabs in their toolbar, and you're in an office with bustling with people, and someone's thinking about their weekend and where they're going to go for their for their spa day on the on Sunday, and they've got an important meeting with one of their customers in the next hour, and you realize how possibly insignificant you are to a customer's life, or how or where you fit and where your place is. And I think that's incredibly humbling and insightful as someone working on a product or building a company, to remind yourself that you are not the world to each of your customers. You are a tiny part of it. And the better you can understand that of your customers, the better you can build to address that and to account for that. You realize how blindingly obvious you have to make things in your product. You realize how little tolerance people have for the product not working as they need it to. You realize how, just stupidly simple you need to make things to really do what people need. And yeah, it's just incredibly insightful to gain that info. And I think pre-lockdown, it was getting in the office to meet people, but the second best thing is to get on a Zoom call and talk to people and understand, what they're up to, what's going on in their day, and where you fit into that. And everyone, no matter, I actually wrote about this the other day, but I think it's often easy to think, well, I'm a busy founder, I'm a busy product person, I don't have time to get on calls with customers. But you can make time if you choose to. You can always make time. You don't find time, you make time
Make
for the
it,
things
yeah.
you want to do. And I think getting on a call with a customer, just ask yourself when the last time you did that was, and if it was more than a week or two ago, then probably worth trying to address that and change that. And I think if you do, then you'll be amazed at what you learn from it. I know I always am.
That makes sense. That makes sense. James, really love the discussion. I feel like we could talk for hours and hours. So I really enjoyed this. But at the same time, it's been an hour and 10 minutes, and
not to force you to do anything, but you've got a couple of questions on the Reddit AMA already.
Right. Okay. Amazing.
I'm glad we touched upon these topics. And again, I feel like in every thread that we make, we could have gone down the rabbit hole deeper and deeper. So I really love how this went. I think we should do it again. And let me know, just for the people listening, besides Twitter, where should they find you? Where can they keep up with you? And is there any stone we've left unturned?
Well, for a start, thank you so much for being a fantastic host, Daniel. I think in terms of following me or whatever, like, I certainly, Twitter is one of my main outlets. I'm James J. Gill on Twitter. That probably shows on here, on Twitter Spaces at least. Obviously, Go Squared is the business, gosquared.com, or you can Google it. You probably don't need to enter the web address these days. If you want to hear more of my ramblings, I do have this podcast called Lost and Founder, which you can find. I tweet that out. So again, head to my Twitter. I've got my own personal blog as well, jamesgill.co, jamesgill.co is the blog. Go Squared is where I put my heart and soul into things every day, as does the rest of the team. And hopefully for a lot of the people listening, what we're doing with Go Squared, the products, the content, the educational stuff is up your street. I just want to say a huge thanks to anyone who's asked questions or listened to this. And thank you to you, Daniel, for hosting me. It's been a true honor. And I'm very grateful to have some stage time with you. It's really great.
Likewise from mine. I just want to touch upon the compliment you said. I was a great host. I was just following your advice, your teaching from the coach. I didn't say too much. I just asked and listened for most of this. So see, I'm a fast learner. I just picked that.
That's the trick.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, James. Thanks very much for your time today. To anybody listening to this who might want to have a question now or a later point, I mean, I don't know how long James will be hanging on, but we've got an ongoing text AMA, so you can type in your question. That's on Reddit SAS/r/SAS. And many more AMAs coming up through, but don't miss this one out with James, because I think he's got a lot of valuable stuff to share besides everything he shared today in this Spaces room. James, thank you very, very much for your time. It's an